All right, so first question, who exploits you? Who exploits you, okay? The early church, straight up honestly, the early church was made up of a lot of poor people, just broke, po people, okay? And a lot of times I wonder if those first century Christians, you know, they could see America and see some of our church buildings, you know, what they would say or what they would think, you know? Because those guys, if you look at the descriptions of the first century church in throughout the Roman Empire, it doesn't sound like the churches in Virginia or the churches in Korea or places like that. They sound more like the church in China, you know, or the church at in Afghanistan, or the persecuted church throughout African continent, you know. And so, the early church was, you know, made up of a lot of poor people. The rich people in the Roman Empire thought Christianity was stupid, waste of time. Besides, they would, I've actually read stuff where they were like, you know, why should I believe in a religion where there's only one God when I can have many gods, right? Because more is better, they thought, right? So it was for the broke, the down and out, the homeless. And that's kind of the situation, okay, for the first few years. And so the church, the church worked really hard to be Jesus to the community. Okay, Jesus, not to say he turned, or he hated rich people, but Jesus attracted, right, people who everybody else looked over. Okay, and the church, the first few years, did the same thing. Now, by the time James writes this, it started to turn around a little bit. Okay, and then there is this growing movement of the church in terms of numbers and growth. And so what began happening is that a lot of rich people started joining in. Okay, and you can look at Corinthians, for example, and a lot of weird, goofy stuff that started happening when the church started getting big and they didn't know what to do. And here is an example where basically the reason, the way that James is responding to the church and the situation there is basically this, that the church is mostly made up of poor people, right? And then what happened was these rich guys started rolling in. And so what they did was they started giving the rich people special attention, right? Like, they never turned people away. Like, if the poor person walked in, they never told them, okay, you can't be here, right? They had to let them in. But at the same time, when the rich guy walked in, you know, they gave him a special seat. You know, the rich guy, or the poor guy, they were like, you can just sit on the ground, it doesn't matter, right? He didn't even get a chair. The poor guy is like, they're like, do whatever you want, as, you know, just don't bother anybody, right? And so that's what James is kind of like going after. And James is kind of saying, hello, wake up. Wake up. Why? Because these people, right, they're in your building, okay? And this is, the first lesson is simply this, that geography does not equal theology. Geography is not the same as theology. Geography, or another way to put it, is geography does not equal salvation. Okay? And you can take that in many ways. For youth group students, it's mostly, I usually explain it in the terms of geography doesn't mean salvation, in that salvation doesn't occur only at retreats. Salvation doesn't occur only at those specific places. Okay, God is too big for geography. Okay, he's everywhere. Right? This one praise leader said, when Jesus died and the curtain in the temple ripped, right? We always think about, oh, it means we have free access to go in. But this one worship leader said, that's true, but it also means that God can now freely come out. You ever think about that? When Jesus died, God can now, he's on the move. He's not, he doesn't sit there anymore. It's kind of dangerous because you don't know where he's going to show up. You know? And so here, but for here, for this lesson, theology does not mean salvation in terms of just because we're in a church building, which is ridiculous in the biblical sense. Because in the Bible, the church is never a building. It's always people. Okay? But, I mean, for 21st century, for modern audience, okay? Geography does not mean salvation in terms of, you know what, we can be at church as many times as we want. But that's not really going to impress God. We can actually even do X, Y, and Z in terms of being a praise leader. You know, Jay can say, look, I brought Matt and Kevin to church. Kevin doesn't like going to church, but I brought him to retreat. I mean, come on, right? God's not impressed with that. Right? Geography, just because our geography changes, it doesn't mean anything. Right? And so, you know, James is kind of hitting at that a little bit. He's like, hey, just because these people walk into your gathering, your worship service, it doesn't mean anything. Right? And he's hitting the point where the point of why are you differentiating between how you treat the people that walk in through the doors? It's as if James is saying, who died and made you the guardian of the church doors? If Jesus, you know, made it so that the church is open and welcome to all, why then do we think it's okay to sit by the door and say, no, you can't come in, no, you could come in. You can come in, but you can only stay here. So what we're doing is we're spiritually segregating the church. And again, I say it many times, we can say, oh yeah, that doesn't happen. That only happens to maybe big churches. That's very, very true. But it also happens to small churches. Because all throughout our lives, my brother and I, we had opportunities to visit and be a part of many different kinds of churches. Small church, big church, medium church, growing church, dying church, all of that in between, right? And there is a difference in terms of how they welcome newcomers. And for specifically for youth group and our second younger generation Koreans growing up in America, our biggest weakness is that we judge. As soon as some new person walk in, we judge so fast. What the sisters call the up-down. We do a spiritual up-down. Y'all know what I'm talking about. Well, guys, maybe. Okay, guys, I'll explain it to you, okay? The girls, all right, the sisters, what they do is, not everybody, okay? I mean, I'm not saying that everybody does it. I'm just saying in general, okay? I'm just saying in general. See, what the girls do is they size each other up, right? And so a girl meets another girl, like, hey, hi. That they do that all nice and stuff, but inside they're like doing, they look from the top of the head to the shoe, and they go back up. Because they judge, they're like, okay, you know what? I think I'm better than her, or I'm whatever than her, or you know what I mean? They compare each other. All right, guys, we don't do that. No, that's a lie. We do that a lot, actually. We do that constantly. Guys do it in many different ways. Like, oh, you know what? I'm better looking than him, or I smell better than him, or I can beat him up. You know. And when we get older and we start driving, like, you know what? My car is better than him. His. You know, my car is faster, it's better looking, it's whatever, you know? So we have this thing, right? And the crazy thing is we bring that to church. We bring that to church. And again, as someone that has been a victim of that sort of discrimination, it sucks. It's terrible. It's the feeling of the most unworthiness, worthlessness. It's a feeling of, you know what, I seriously don't care about you. And that is the worst message the church can say to anybody. And it's a big deal here for the church, because the church, if anything, if everything in the world fails, the church, the one thing that must stay true is that the church must be the church and must be the safe place. Back in the day, in the days of Augustine, right, at the beginning of the Middle Ages, right, around that time, when the when the Roman Empire is like crumbling and stuff, right? What happened was there was like churches everywhere, right? And when the barbarians, whether it be Muslims from the east or Vikings or whatever from the west, right? One of the things, even the Muslims and the, not the Vikings or whoever, people, the whatever, right? Whoever crazy army was coming into your village, whatever religion or whatever faction that they were, one thing that everyone respected was that you were able to usually, in that time of great crisis, run into the church and claim sanctuary. That means as long as you were in there, you are safe. They cannot touch you. The problem is in 21st century America, 20th century, 21st century, we've lost that concept of sanctuary. This must be a safe place, not because of the building, but because a person must be able to come through that door and feel welcome, feel safe, that they are not judged. Or put another way, a newcomer walking through that door should feel more comfortable here than they do at school. Where you're constantly, I was in high school too. Where you're constantly surrounded by, eyes, people judging you, people always, even your friends. And so when people walk in, they should be freed from that burden. And so James is saying, "Hey, okay, what are you doing? Why do you get to segregate? Why do you get to judge and treat people like garbage? You treat people well. We can't do that. We're not allowed to do that, right?" And then James said, and he gives three examples. He's like, "Why? Because number one, these people, these rich people, these rich, fancy people that are coming in that you're so, bending over backwards to impress and treat well, these are the ones that are screwing you over as soon as Sunday service is over. It's almost like they walk into church all dressed nice and stuff, and they're like, oh, hey, how you doing? You're all like, hey, how you doing? You're trying to be all nice, show them the nice seat and everything. And then as soon as Sunday service is over, they come back, they shake your hand, hey, and you're like, hey, it was all good, and you're talking, and then they're like, oh, by the way, here's a lawsuit, thanks, see you in court tomorrow. What the? Right? And this is literally what was happening. Right? Because back in the day, just like today, the rich people, they had the money to hire lawyers. And so they had the power of the law. And so they were screwing over the poor people in courts. Suing them, whatever. Right? One example that we see in James chapter 5, verse 3, is that these people would employ, like rich people would hire people to do something, a job, and then they wouldn't pay them. And then when they cause a ruckus, they're like, oh, where's my money? Right? The rich people would sue them and say, oh, they're causing me all kinds of, grief. I didn't do anything wrong. But the poor people, they can't afford a lawyer, so they lose. Right? And so James is like, what are you doing? Those workers, they're members of your church. They're your, they teach your kids about the Bible. They're your deacons. And you're gonna welcome these monsters, these jackals, these jerks who sue them just because they can to get to take from them whatever little money they have, and you're gonna, because, you know, why? It makes no sense. This professor said like this, if Christians pay tribute or show favoritism to the rich who exploit and oppress the poor, the Christians go contrary to the teachings of Scripture. The Christians are in the wrong camp, for they are the ones who should defend the poor. You get that? Another way to say it is this. When we show favoritism, right, and we're favoring the rich people, especially in this context, what he's doing is, you're not acting like Jesus. Jesus went, he actually turned the tide. The normal thing was you were like especially nice to the rich people. Jesus was especially nice to the poor people. He's giving them special attention, right? And so what this professor is saying is basically when we take that back, we're actually copying not the actions of Jesus, but we're copying the actions of the world. And my pastor once said this, the world doesn't try to be like Christians. Then why is it that so many Christians, we try so hard to act like the world? And that's exactly what we're doing here. And in continuation, the second question James asks is, who drags you into court? Right? And we touched that a little bit. Right? It's these rich people who are dragging you into court for no reason. They're in the wrong, but you know, because they can afford the lawyers and all that stuff, they always win. And it doesn't make sense that they are harming members of your church. But then you don't care, because as soon as they walk in, you're all, welcome to our church. You know, and in this area, 350 some odd Korean American churches, and there's three international airports in the area that bring in a lot of Korean immigrants from Korea and from New York and stuff. Guess what? They actually had this on the newspaper that Koreans, first time in America, right? And they come here, either they're visiting or whatever, whether it be visiting or to because they are coming here to move. They said something like 90 to 95% of them. They asked them, they're like, okay, so what are you going to do? How are you going to get, you know, kind of settled? They say, oh, I'm going to go to church. And the second question is, well, are you a Christian? And almost always they say no. And they're like, well, why are you going to go to church? They're like, oh, it's because, you know, I want to know other Koreans. That's always the thing, right? And so every Korean church in this area, we know this. There's a humongous flood of Koreans just coming in, right? But the sad thing that I see is exactly what James is going against, which is that our churches, not just our church, but every church, we try so hard to get like those really rich, you know, those guys who are like hooked up, you know. Why? What about those kids, you know? What about those kids that we just forget about? Or what about those families that come and they have no money? Our family, when we first came to America, we landed in Philadelphia. My mom tells me only thing we had was the clothes on our back, some bags with more clothes and my dad's books, and $1,000 in cash. That's all we had. We had so little money that we couldn't even afford our own apartment, so we had to live with our aunt for a few months. You know, but you know, I was like 8 years old, and Peter was five, and we didn't care, we just roaming around. Oh, we have cousins now, sweet, you know. But, you know, how come we don't know about those people? We forget about them. My mother, I love my mother, and I could say so many, I could just sit here and recount stuff I learned from her. But this one lesson, when it was happening, I didn't understand, but now it makes a little bit more sense, which is a few years ago, about 10 years ago or so, it was actually in this area. My dad had, it was like he was on his last church that he was actually serving as a senior pastor. And my mom was coming home from work one day. And she brought this random, like literally stray kid off the street home with her. We're like, "Mom, what are you doing?" Right? And this boy, he was straight off, like fresh off the airplane. Right? He still had the Korean airline, you know, like stuff, you know. This boy was lost. So what he was trying to do was, after school, he was trying to catch the bus back to his rented apartment. You know, like his mom would send money to this person and they would let him stay with them and stuff, you know. But he totally just got confused, so he was totally lost. So he was just kind of walking around Annandale, and my mom saw him, you know. And she was apparently started a conversation, and she figured out, she found out that, you know, he was lost and, you know, stuff like that. And so she brought him home, and then she fed him, because my mom thinks that if you really love Jesus, you're gonna feed them. You have to feed people. That's how you show love, right? And then we sent him, you know, we figured out where he lived and dropped him off and stuff. And it was almost like a Harry Potter scenario, like where he lived. It was kind of weird. Anyway, we eventually somehow got him to kind of live with us, right? And then my brother and I like adopted him. He's a punk, man. We should just beat him up for like 3 weeks in a row. He was a punk. That boy needed to be humble. Anyway, that's another sermon. Anyway, right? But we took this stray kid in, you know, took him to church. He's never been to church in his whole life. We know this. He don't know how to say the words. He don't know how to pray. But does it matter? Because right? My mom's like, it doesn't matter. People like that, she said, actually, one time, I was like, "Mom, what the heck? This kid is really annoying and all this stuff." My mom's like, "Hey, those are the kind of people that Jesus likes. So we welcome them in." All right. And so this is, and James again here saying, this is what you're supposed to be doing. The down and out, the poor, the broken, the lost, the ones that everybody kind of looks over, those are the ones that we're supposed to concentrate on. Not the ones that roll in, you know, with the right clothes, you know, everything ready, good to go. The last question, who slandered Christ's name? I gotta admit, this was a little bit of a difficult thing for me to kind of swallow in terms of trying to understand what it's saying. But what James is trying to say is, the best kind of example I can think of was this. Imagine a scenario where the popular kids at school, right, at your school, showed up at our youth group. Showed up on Sunday morning. Right? And we're like, "Oh, snap," you know? Or if it's Yoongi's case, it's, you know, Cinderella and Prince, whatever his name was, walked in. Right? You're like, "Oh, man," you know? So you're especially nice to them and welcoming to them, you know? And they come and they smile and they stand when they're supposed to stand, sit when they're supposed to sit, and then they go home. And you're like, "Man, I think I made a good impression." Problem is, you go back to school on Monday and they still treat you like you're nobody. They don't even remember your name, you know? Or another way is kind of make it more interesting is, you know, imagine they went back to school and they were like, "Hey, you know what? Nathan goes to this small, like, you know, booger-sized Korean church and it's like super ghetto and everything, like stuff doesn't work and, you know, it's kind of weird, you know?" You're like, "What the heck?" You know? That would suck. But imagine they came back the next Sunday and then Yoongi did it again. Yoongi was all like, "Oh, Cinderella and Prince, whatever your face is, right? you're like super welcoming and nice to them. You know? And then they go back to school and they're like, you know what? Nathan goes to church. He believes in Jesus. That's so weird. You know, they start making fun of him, right? And Yoongi's not like Jay. Jay, you know, he doesn't fight back. Jay, Yoongi's just like, oh, don't do that. Okay, no. Right? And that's kind of like what James is shooting for. He's like, yo, these people, they screw you over in the outside of the church setting. You know? Furthermore, they're not just screwing you over, but they're like talking bad about you in terms of your faith. They're talking bad about you and the fact that you trust in Jesus. Why are you so desperate to earn their approval? That's kind of the hidden kind of question that James is actually asking. Like, what makes them so great that you're willing to trade in the approval of God for their approval? Why? Because according to the Bible, when they make fun of you, especially about your faith, then they're attacking Jesus. Right? In the Bible, Christians all over the place, Old Testament and New Testament, we are called God's people. We are not our own. Deuteronomy 28:10, 2 Chronicles 7:14, Isaiah 43:7, Jeremiah 14:9, Amos chapter 9, verse 12, Revelation 22:4. Those are just a few. Simply say that we are, the people of God are called by His name. We are called by the name of the Lord. Okay. So our identity is tied in intimately, very closely to God. And so when someone says, oh, look at Nathan, he believes in that stuff. How foolish. They're not, in fact, attacking Nathan, but they're attacking God. Right? And so the question again returns to, why, you know, James is saying, why are we so, why is there man's approval so important that we are willing to trade in the approval of God? So a couple closing thoughts. What do we do with this? I mean, it seems like James is basically saying, if rich people come to your church, kick them out because you don't need them. They all suck. Okay? And for a long period of my life, I firmly believe that to be gospel truth, you know? But that's not true, okay? Jesus loves rich people too, okay? What James is saying in terms of this, he's using the rich people and the poor people as an example. Okay? He's not literally saying, you know, rich people suck, so you shouldn't let them come to church. No. What James is saying is, whether it be rich people, poor people, it doesn't matter. You treat them the same way. Why? Because in the eyes of God, our past is past. What's important is our relationship with Christ. And so whatever the status of the person that walking through those doors, what we have to see is, spiritually speaking, whether it be rich or poor, they all need, there is the same level of desperate need for Christ. And so we have to treat them in that fashion. So we treat the poor and the rich in the same way. Okay? Because whatever they wear when they walk in has zero impact on their spiritual eternity. Because we must remember, at one point, if we are true followers of God, we walked in through those doors, rich or poor, and God accepted us, regardless. God did not accept us because of what we wear. God did not accept us because of our bank accounts. He accepted us simply in love. And so as a church, that's what we are commanded to do. Let's pray.